Hey, the Mishnahs continue to discuss the various testimonies of different Tanoim, and the subject of this Mishnah is the liquid, the brine, which exudes from locusts, and the Torah lists a number of different types of locusts, which are kosher, and all other locusts are not kosher, they can't be eaten. The question is, what about the liquid which comes out of these non-kosher locusts? Rabbi Tzadik testified about the liquid which comes out of non-kosher locusts, that liquid is tohar, it's kosher. That's what tohar in this context means. And the point of Rabbi Tzadik is that the liquid which comes out of the body of the locust is not considered to be blood. Rather, its status is just like wet moisture which comes out of the locust, and because of that, it is kosher, and it's not considered to be part of the body of the locust which has come out of it, in which case it would not be kosher. And the Mishnah adds, Shemishnah Rishayna, because the original teaching, the original Mishnah, until Rabbi Tzadik gave his testimony, was that Chagovim Tameim Shenichbashim Chagovim Tahirim Neposlu Tziron. That if non-kosher locusts were pickled together with kosher locusts, and during that pickling process, liquid came out of both the kosher locusts and the non-kosher locusts and were mixed together. So he said that liquid will be considered kosher, since part of it does come from a kosher locust, so perhaps it would nullify the part of the liquid which came from a non-kosher locust, but only because mixed in it was the liquid which came from the kosher locust. But if the liquid which came from the non-kosher locust was by itself, according to the original teaching, the original law was that it would not be kosher. You couldn't consume that by itself. But Rabbi Tzadik's testimony added that the entire moisture which comes out of the locusts, even if the locusts themselves are not kosher, the moisture which comes out of them will be kosher, even without being mixed with anything else. Mishnah Gimel, when we talk about somebody purifying themselves in a mikveh, there are really two different types of mikvahs, two different types of bodies of water, which somebody who is tomei might need to dip themselves in one of these in order to purify themselves. And in general, a regular mikvah, which comes from natural rainwater, or at least the first part of the mikvah comes from natural rainwater, that will be enough to be considered a valid mikvah for the person to be purified in. However, there are certain people with certain types of tumah that for them to be purified, they would need to immerse themselves in a mayon, which means a natural spring of water. Not just water which came down from the rain, but water which was produced and which came from the ground from a natural spring. And the Mishnah Mikvahs teaches that water which flows from a natural spring and continues flowing along the ground, and maybe ends up as a pool of water elsewhere, if ultimately that came from a natural spring of water, then it has the same status, and that would also be valid as a mayon. And the same applies for a mikvah. If there's water flowing from a place where the rainwater landed, then that would also have the same status as the mikvah itself. And there are a number of differences between a mayon and a mikvah. Be as it may, this Mishnah tells us that Rabbi Tzadik testified an additional testimony, about water which is flowing from a natural spring, which was more than water which was dropping and continued flowing from rainwater. Meaning we have water which emanated from a mayon and water which emanated from a mikveh, and both these waters met and got mixed together. And the majority of that water in this mixture was water which emanated from a mayon. So Rabbi Tzadik testified, Shem Kasherim, that they are valid to be considered even a mayon. That those people who require a mayon in order to be purified and cannot use a mikveh, they would be able to purify themselves in a body of water like this, and the regular laws of a mayon would apply to this body of water, since the majority of it is water which emanated from a mayon. And indeed, the Mishnah supports this. Maisach Hoyo Bavira Sapilya. There was a story which once happened in Bira Sapilya, which possibly means a large building, a bira, in a place called Pilya. And they had this exact case, and the story came in front of the Chachomim, and they said that it's valid as a mayon, and this would indeed support the testimony of Rabbi Tzadik. So really, since the beginning of this perek, we've had testimonies of Rabbi Tzadik. The first Mishnah was a testimony of Rabbi Tzadik together with Rabbi Yeshua, and Mishnah Beis and Gimel were testimonies of Rabbi Tzadik himself. And Mishnah Dalet now continues that, hey Rabbi Tzadik testified, another halacha to do with a mikveh, or more specifically to do with a mayon. The law is that if you have water flowing from a natural spring of water, As we said, it's considered to be, it's got the same status as the Mayon, as the natural spring. However, as soon as that water flows through a kli, through a utensil, and a utensil in this area at least is generally defined as something which can hold things, if the water flows through something like that, if it's man-made and it can hold things, then that water would lose its status as being a Mayon, and it would no longer be able to purify somebody who requires purification in a Mayon. So Hedi Bitzodik testified, Al Zeichalin Shakilchan Ba'alei Egoiz. He testified about water which was flowing from a Mayon, from a natural spring, that somebody directed and he channeled those waters through the leaf of a walnut. This is referring to the outer shell of the walnut. And he turned it into a sort of gutter where he could have the water flowing through there. And the Ritzolik testified, Shein Kasherin, that the water which flows through there is still valid as a Mayon. His point being that this is not considered to be a real kli, it's not considered to be a utensil, even though it can hold things, because since it's much softer than a regular container which holds things, it is not significant enough to be considered a proper utensil which would invalidate the Mayon, the water from being considered a continuation of that natural spring. And indeed, once again, this is supported by a story, my story about Ahalya. There's a story which once happened in Ahalya that somebody directed the waters of a Mayon through a outer shell of a walnut, and the story came in front of the Chachomim, the Sanhedrin, who were sitting in Lishkas Agozis, the chamber in the Beit HaMikdosh, where the big Sanhedrin of 71 judges sat, and they discussed this case, and indeed they validated the water to still be considered a valid Mayon. Mishnah Hey, when talking about the laws of Tumah and Tara, which things can become impure, which can't, one very important factor is the material from which that object is made. For example, there are certain materials such as stone. Something made of stone cannot become Tomei. Another material which has unique laws is something made out of clay or earthenware. If it comes from the earth, then the law is that it can only become Tomei from its inside. So if something Tomei, let's say, touches the outside of a earthenware, of a clay utensil, of a clay object, it wouldn't become Tomei. Only if it touches the inside or enters into the inside of that utensil, only then would it become Tomei. Now, when somebody becomes Tomei with a very great level of Tumah, because he came in contact with a dead body, part of the purification process there is that he needs to be sprinkled with a solution containing water and the ashes of a Parah Adumah, a special red cow, which they would get, and they would get the ashes of that red cow, mix it with water, they would sprinkle that onto the person who was Tomei. And there are many, many, many stringencies in the world of Tumah and Tara regarding these ashes, to make sure that those were kept tahar, because we basically depended on these ashes to make everybody who was Tomei tahar. So if the ashes would become Tomei, they would become invalid, and we would have no way of making everybody who was Tomei tahar. So there are many stringencies in place. Be as it may, the Torah says that these ashes, the solution of water with ashes, needs to be placed b'makom tahar, in a pure place. And because of this pasuk, Hey Rabbi Yeshua v'Rabbi Yochim Ishadar, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yochim Ishadar testified al kolol shel chatos concerning a earthenware container of Parah Adumah ashes mixed with the water. So you have this solution containing Parah Adumah ashes inside an earthenware utensil, an earthenware container. Shenasoni al gabi asheretz, that somebody placed this container on top of a dead sheretz. A sheretz is one of the 8 small creeping animals which the Torah declares are a source of tumah when they are dead. And somebody placed this container of Parah Adumah ashes onto a dead sheretz. And Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yochim Ishadar testified, Shehu Tomei, that the solution and the Parah Adumah ashes would become Tomei in such a case, even though the source of tumah only touched the outside of that utensil, and an earthenware container cannot become Tomei from its outside, only from its inside. Nevertheless, that's true. In this case, the container will actually remain tahar, but the Parah Adumah ashes which are inside the container would become Tomei. Since the Torah went out of its way to tell us that the ashes need to be placed b'mokom tahar, in a pure place, we learn from there that if you place this container elsewhere, on top of somewhere which is a source of tumah, then the ashes would become Tomei, even though they're placed in a container which remains tahar, because this is a special stringency regarding the Parah Adumah ashes themselves. And the Mishnah tells us, Shir Beliezer Mataher, because Rabbi Eliezer said that in this case, the ashes would remain pure. If the container in which they are in is pure, that means that the ashes themselves are considered to be B'makom Tahar. They are placed in a pure place, because the container in which they are in is pure. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yochum Ishadara saying that no, at the end of the day, the container itself is placed on something which is a source of Tumah. So effectively, the ashes are not in a pure place. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, the ashes are in a pure place because the container is pure. And that's enough to consider sort of the place of the Paradoma ashes to be a pure place. Right now, the second half of this Mishnah discusses a Nozir. A Nozir is somebody who accepts upon himself a certain vow, three main restrictions. Firstly, not cutting his hair. Secondly, not consuming anything which comes from grapes, from a vine. And thirdly, not becoming Tome from a dead body. And the minimum amount of time that somebody can be a Nozir for is 30 days. And if somebody accepts upon himself to be a Nozir and he doesn't specify for how long he's going to be a Nozir, then he'll be a Nozir for the minimum amount of time, which is 30 days. Now, ideally, he needs to be a Nozir for 30 full days, and then on the 31st day, once he's completed his Nozirus period, he needs to bring certain korbanos, cut his hair, and then he stops being a Nozir. However, there is a rule called Mikzas Hayom Kekuloi, that halachically speaking, once part of a day has passed, we're able to consider part of a day like a full day. And therefore, if somebody who was a Nozir, on his 30th day, he went ahead and bought the korbanos and cut his hair and went through this whole process, even though ideally he should only do it on the 31st day, if he did it on the 30th day, it would be valid, because he was at least a Nozir for the first part of that day, until he cut his hair and bought the korbanos and everything. That whole process is completing his Nozirus. But until he did that, for the first part of the day, he was a regular Nozir. And so that partial day is considered like a full day, and it's considered as if it was a Nozir for 30 full days. Now, Rabbi Papias testified, Al Mish Nozir Shtei Nozirus, regarding somebody who accepted upon himself two periods of Nozirus. So two lots of 30 days of being a Nozir. And at the end of each one, he'll have to go through this whole process of bringing korbanos and shaving his hair, and then he'll start the next one. So like we said, ideally, he should complete his first Nozirus by bringing the korbanos and everything on the 31st day. But, she'im gilach es harishoni yom shaloshim, if he did bring these korbanos and shave his hair for the first period of Nozirus, on the 30th day instead of the 31st, like we said, that's valid. Once he's done it, that is valid. And in such a case, because of the rule of Mikzas Hayom Kekuloi, the first day of his second Nozirus, his second period of being a Nozir, that day already starts on the same day. Let's say he bought his korbanos and shaved his hair to complete the first period of being a Nozir. There's still a couple of hours left of that day. There's still a few hours left. So those few hours left of that day, because of the rule of Mikzas Hayom Kekuloi, they count as a full day. So that would already, by the end of that day, that would be considered as if he's completed one entire day of the second period of being a Nozir. So that's the 30th day, that's already the first day of the second period. Which means that the 31st day of the second period of being a Nozir is going to be Shem Galeach HaShini Yom Shishim. The 60th day is the 31st day, and that's when he should bring the korbanos and shave his hair on behalf of the second period of being a Nozir. And of course it follows therefore, v'im gilach yom shishim chaser echad, if you went through this whole process on day 60 minus 1, meaning on day 59, yotzah, he has fulfilled his obligation, and it is valid, shiyom shleishim elu lemin aminyon, because the 30th day counts towards the days that he needs to be a nozir for. And we see over here, not only that mikzas yom kekuloi, a part of a day can be considered like a whole day, and over here that's true both for the first day of his Nozirus. We're talking about the second period of Nozirus over here. The first day was only a partial day, and the last day was only a partial day. But because of the rule of Mikzas Hayom Kekuloi, that's alright, that's counted. But not only that, we also see that the 30th day counted both for the first period of Nozirus, the few hours which there were until he bought the korbanos and went through this whole process, counted as the final day of his first period of being a Nozir, and the few hours after he did that whole process counted as the first day for his second period of being a Nozir. So we see that via the rule of Mikzas Hayom Kekuloi, we can use the same day to count for two different periods of being a Nozir, and count them both as being as if it's a full day. That's sort of the main point which Rabbi Papias is trying to give over in his testimony.